This is Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA. Be a part of the conversation. Text us at 580-580.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for joining us. My thanks to Graham Richardson for filling in yesterday. Good to be back. Boy, another busy news day. Coming up, we've got the Nurses Association president. We got the Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association president. Those are just two of the people who are saying, yeah, we need to get more serious about this. Also, how to keep working from home post-COVID. Apparently, a lot of people are tired of it. Many others are saying, I'm liking what's going on here. So how do you convince your boss? And could that new COVID variant in Japan be a game changer? Apparently, it's reinfecting people who've already been vaccinated. Do we really have to worry, or was that the exception to the rule? That and a lot more coming up before noon. But first,
Ottawa at Work. Big five stories.
Yeah, we're counting them down as we always do at this time. Joining me in studio, as per usual, 6 feet away from me, CFRA's Chris Holsky. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
And further than 6 feet away, and she's on the phone, that's how serious she's taking this, Lisa Kirby, CEO of Blackbird Strategies. Welcome back. Good to talk to you, Lisa.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. First up, I'm going to throw a bit of a left curve here because Mark Fisher, who is an Ottawa-Carleton District School Board trustee and a dad, he wasn't originally on the discussion agenda today, but I spoke to him not that long ago on CTV Morning Live. So he is a trustee. He has two kids that go to school in his ward, and he has decided to keep the kids home. Listen to this.
You know, I'll be the first one to say that I want schools to remain open. And when community contacts and transmissions are kept incredibly low, we know that there are safe places. But we're seeing record levels in Ottawa. We're seeing record levels across the province at the moment. And so collectively as a family, we decided the best thing to do was to keep our kids at home.
Until after the spring break. So a week from now, and so I guess it's like 10 days from now. Now, here's the little background. He has two kids. One of them has been tested five times and had to stay home and isolate three times. And he said with the variants, he's not taking any chances. What does it say to you, Lisa, when a trustee is making this decision, despite the fact the schools are open?
Well, I think we need to be listening to our trustees. I mean, I can't believe that his kid has had to go through that. You know, five tests and three having to stay at home. You know, I'm very fortunate. I have adult children, and I don't have to make these decisions for my kids. But parents are in an impossible choice. You know, they're basically effectively choosing between whether or not they can do their jobs, because, of course, most of them are working from home, and keeping their kids safe. And at this point, I think, you know, Mr. Fisher and also some of the other city councilors, as well as our medical officer of health, you know, are all calling for the same thing. You know, schools right now don't feel safe. You know, the numbers don't seem to indicate that. So I'm with Mark Fisher on this one.
He's not alone. I can tell you that we all know Michael O'Byrne, of course, from CTV News for years. His daughter is a vice principal, and she is keeping her kids home as well.
Wow, like a vice principal directly in the middle of all this. Some clarity on Dr. Etches. She signed that letter suggesting that schools should be closed in areas where they need to be closed.
As defined by whom?
Well, the situation right now in Ottawa is that public health is currently evaluating the status here. And again this morning on The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll, Dr. Etches defending schools still being open. So we will see what kind of decision comes from that in the days to come.
But if you're a parent, there's mixed messages
here's the thing that I look at right now. Is this no longer just a public health issue, but a mental health issue for parents? I don't think that I've seen this level of worry online from people who have children in school for months. I think there is more mental concern happening in Ottawa about kids being in school right now than there has been in some time. And I think that is going to have to start factoring into whatever decision they make.
Why is that? Is it because we're calling it the new pandemic?
Well, not just the new pandemic. You had Dr. Vera Etches coming on this morning talking about how it's a life and death situation. You have the story about a teacher being put in hospital due to transmission from student to student.
That's
and also growing number of outbreaks, especially in areas closer to the GTA, and what happened in Peel yesterday when they made the decisions to shut down schools today, where there's more of a push in the direction that more schools should be closing. Parents are going to start to get worried, and ultimately I don't blame them for feeling that way.
Well, they shut the schools in Peel, of course, on order of their medical officer of health as of today. And then all of next week, of course, is what was March break, now April break. Doesn't it just make sense to do it now and let the next 10 days play out, Lisa?
100%. Like, to me, if we're talking about, and we're already at Tuesday, right? Because we just had a 4-day weekend. You know, if we're talking about sending your kids to school for 4 days and then keeping them home for the next 2 weeks or however long spring break is this year, why would you send them this week just to bring them home and potentially they come and infect the entire family? You know, it is definitely a health issue, but you're right. It absolutely is a mental health issue as well. You know, parents have been doing this for 13 months now, and I can't imagine the pressure and stress and guilt on them. And of course, for the kids too, you know, this constant back and forth. Am I going to see my friends? Am I not going to see my friends? Am I going to have to try to learn school on a computer? Like, there's so much here that's to be of a concern.
And it wouldn't be permanent, right? We're just saying until after the break. And here's the other issue. It would send that huge message to those who are pushing back, like the salon owner I had on CTV Morning Live this morning, who said, there hasn't been one single case spread in the salon. I'm going to open up. I'm going to defy the rules because otherwise I'm going to close my shop for good because I can't afford to stay closed. And I can hear her. And there are a lot of business people who feel the same way. But my point was, use your voice in a different way. Don't defy the rules because you're going to have to pay even more when bylaw comes knocking and makes a scene and makes you the example.
Exactly. She was very passionate in that interview this morning, but I think a lot of that needs to be directed more to getting the right kind of government support. She was talking about how some of her applications, including for rent help, have been denied. And that's a major red flag.
Yeah.
And that this is going to force people into these kinds of situations where one looks at her argument, and she believes that it is enough to fight any fine that comes her way. I don't think you're going to find a legal expert who's going to agree with her on this one. But they need more. They do need more help, and that we're getting this close to more people just flagrantly violating these rules, and in fact, broadcasting that they're going to violate these rules.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Well, and she says she has nothing to lose at this point because she's already losing her business if she stays closed, Lisa.
Well, let's remember, too, I mean, we don't want anyone to be defying public health orders, but in the personal care industry, we always also have to keep in mind that 81% of business owners in that industry are women. You know, the workers are women. The owners are women. Yeah. So this entire class of personal care services shutting down has a huge impact on our economy and whether or not women can participate in it. So I completely understand their frustration, particularly if they can't get any of those government supports. But it begs a bigger question. You know, are we providing enough support? We've been having this discussion for months now about paid sick time, which, of course, is under the provincial jurisdiction. And I think that's one of the things that needs to be implemented here. We need to have proper supports for people, whether that is for their rents or for their the wage subsidies, or for sick leave, so people who aren't feeling well can stay home without fear of not being able to pay rent next month.
Or is the solution here, Lisa, to basically pivot the vaccination rollout and say, you know what, salon owner, grocery store owner, hey, teachers, let's vaccinate you next?
Well, we definitely have to take a look at how we're doing this rollout. You know, my own daughter is a store manager in a mall here in Ottawa. They're open. So malls, or this mall in particular, at least, there's no limits of capacity as to how many people can be inside the mall.
The only limit
comes to within the stores, and it's left up to, you know, the skeleton crew of staff, because the owners don't want to do a full complement of staff because they're not making the revenue they used to make. And, you know, there's stress on everybody here, but these, quote, essential workers who are working in malls, they should be vaccinated. They are definitely at high risk. We had to make a very difficult decision this weekend in my family because my daughter's terrified of getting me sick. You know, me living alone with my dog, they're my one contact family. And we're now going to be doing our visits outside because she is absolutely afraid of bringing it home and getting me sick.
We had Dr. Etches on this morning, as I mentioned before, and she was suggesting, not very non-committal fashion, that probably pretty soon. Those were her words. So not very solid footing that public clinics would be opening to people 60 plus in Ottawa. I think the time is now. where we need to pivot. We need to make that pivot immediately to getting essential workers to the front of the line.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hesitancy going around in all parts of the province right now, and someone needs to make up their mind to do something aggressive and do something that public health experts are saying already is going to do a more effective job at fighting this virus.
Well, if you think about it, if any city has to do that, it would be here in Ottawa, because the majority of government workers, which we are a government town, are working from home, are
That's
they right. not? Shouldn't we be doing it first here? And get your daughter vaccinated ASAP, Lisa?
For sure. All of those men and women who are working those jobs, whether it's in restaurants or in retail outlets, anyone who's coming in contact with other people, teachers, why aren't teachers at the front of the line?
Yeah.
We absolutely have to pivot. And I think the rollout here in Ottawa, I checked yesterday, I think we're still at age 70 and above.
Yes.
So, what are you doing?
Here's the problem I think Ottawa is running into right now, and it's actually a pretty good problem to have, it's taking a lot longer for us to get through the 70-plus age group than it is communities like Toronto. Well, to be more technically correct, we're filling more appointments, in that age group, which means more people in each age group, it appears, are getting vaccinated in Ottawa. That is a good thing, but what that means is that if we roll down to 60 next, you've got 100,000 more people who are in that age group. It's going to take even longer to get to essential personnel in Ottawa. That's why we need to make that change now in this city.
Oh, good case right there. All right,
coming
up, the UK starts the reopening of its economy next week. Shops, gyms, hairdressers, all outdoor hospitality areas across England will be open to the public. How are they doing that? We'll tell you next. Big Five continues after this short break.
Ottawa at Work, Big Five Stories.
We're continuing to count down the Big Five on this Tuesday morning. Chris Holsky and Lisa Kirby, CEO of Blackbird Strategies. All right, let's talk about, something you put up on the Facebook page for CFRA this morning, Chris, that sort of drew a lot of reaction. And that is, we just across the river, they're getting, 16?
Not that river,
yeah,
but the other river.
No, the other, the American side. What are they at now for vaccinations?
I know over and over again I've said that it's important that we not try to focus too much on the United States in terms of their vaccine rollout, because they're in a completely different boat from Canada, from parts of Europe when it comes to distribution. But
however,
it is so hard today in New York State, the closest state to Ottawa. All adults 16 plus
1-6,
are now eligible for a vaccine. For a COVID-19 vaccine. So if you're sitting along the seaway right now, if you're in Prescott looking over at Ogdensburg, if you're at Cornwall, you may have to get up to a high area to see Messina all the way over from there. But anybody staring back at you from the American side who's 16 plus is now eligible for a vaccine.
Yeah.
That is unreal.
Is it fair to compare, or is it apples and oranges, Lisa?
Well, I don't think it's particularly fair to compare. I believe if I'm right in remembering the statistics on the vaccine procurement, I think we're about 3 million doses ahead of where we expected to be. So we are doing better than what it was expected. But it is hard to see that, eligibility is expanding to 16 plus. You know, I saw that clip of the Jays game last night in the States,
man,
with the packed stands.
Masks or no masks? Do they have masks, all the people?
No.
This is Texas, so it was in Texas, so there are no mask regulations there anymore, right?
Right.
So, I think that they still have some problems of their own over there, and they're also seeing, increased variants, and they're seeing cases still climbing. So, they're not out of the woods, so I think our envy, we should keep it in check a little bit. Once we're out of this current growing COVID transmission in Ontario, I think by that point we're probably going to see this nice synergy of the numbers coming down and our population increasing in terms of who's getting vaccinated. I think I've read that everyone should be getting their first vaccine at least by the end of June. So I'm just remaining hopeful on that. And I'll roll up my sleeve anytime I'm called.
So don't be envious of the Americans. What about the English? Next week, the UK starts its planned reopening of the economy. Shops, gyms, hairdressers, outdoor hospitality areas across England will be open to the public. How are they doing this? Well, one way they're doing it, of course, is they've had a successful AstraZeneca rollout, and they're having rapid COVID-19 testing as the government continues to expand it. You can get one for free, pick one up at the pharmacy or at a test site, or even get them in the mail. Don't we have a couple, hundreds of thousands, in fact, gathering dust here in Ontario?
I think we need to make that plan to start using them as we reopen more parts of the economy. But one thing that the UK also had that we are not having right now is an incredibly harsh response to the UK variant of COVID-19, where they already had some level of hard restrictions and then had to clamp down even further. And remind me, what's happening again in Ontario right now?
Yeah.
It's not good what's happening here. And at certain points, yeah, I think the first wave, we were definitely being governed by health advice. And I'm just not so sure we're doing that anymore. And we're not going to get out of this until we do what the experts are suggesting, which is doing a hard stay at home for a few weeks, mm-hmm. seeing if we can get things under control. This isn't working.
Well, we had that comment from the spokesperson from the Minister of Health yesterday, essentially, which was in defiance of the top doctors of Toronto, Peel, and Ottawa, saying, well, let the current restrictions stay in place and we'll see what goes on from there. But Premier Ford, he's on the podium at 1 o'clock this afternoon. He's going to be facing some very tough questions from the media today.
What are we going to hear from him? What do you think? You want to take a stab at what he's going to say?
Well, I know what we have heard from him in the past is that he said over and over again that he will not hesitate. And what's happening right now in Ontario is a lot of hesitation.
Lisa?
What I find interesting about this press conference that Ford is having today is that the Solicitor General is also going to be appearing. So why is Minister Jones going to be there today? Are they going to be talking about enforcement? Are they going
to
be...
They
absolutely need to.
There is growing anger. There is growing pushback in terms of saying, I'm going to defy it. We have it here in the city of Ottawa on Twitter every day. And it is a problem.
In the best case scenario today, well, any case scenario. So what the province needs to do is they need to have it. If they're not going to say that, hey, we're going to listen and have a stay-at-home order in Toronto, Peel, Ottawa, province-wide, there needs to be some kind of counter-proposal, something. Anything. You can't just say we're going to stick with what's been going on since Saturday in the province because you already have top health officials saying this isn't enough. You have to say we're going to take things a step further. I don't know what that step is going to be, but the province needs to have something.
I'm wondering if the Prime Minister, who of course is dodging a bullet here because it's a provincial jurisdiction when it comes to rollout and measures, and he's also got a press conference as we're going to take live at 11:30, how he is feeling this morning, because technically, as you mentioned, Lisa, we're ahead of the rollout in terms of what was expected. I mean, he's potentially dodging a bullet here, or is he going to have to wear some of this blame too, do you think?
Well, I think for sure. I mean, we have to address, you know, how the provinces are rolling out the vaccination efforts. I mean, has he dodged a bullet in the sense that he is not responsible for vaccine rollouts? For sure. And it's going to be the premiers who are going to have to answer for that when election day comes. And we don't forget, in Ontario, we have to have an election within the next 14 months. So everyone is looking at this through that political lens. But in terms of what Trudeau is going to say to us today, I have absolutely no idea. As you know, this is a break week for the House of Commons.
Yep.
They're supposed to be coming back next week with bringing in a budget. So I'm not sure what we're going to get today from the Prime Minister.
Wouldn't it be nice? He said we got an additional $5 million coming in the next 2 weeks. That's what I want to hear. That's my wish list this morning. Lisa
Me
Kirby,
too.
CEO, Blackbird Strategy, is always good to have you on. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Chris Holsey goes back into the newsroom. Speaking of, the news next here. News Talk 580 CFRA.
At Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA. Agree or disagree, we want to hear from you. Text us at 580-580.
Well, it was the chief medical officer in Peel Region next to Toronto, the Mississauga area, that made the decision for parents when he said, we're closing the schools. We're closing them for the rest of this week, and of course next week is the new March break because they postponed it. So basically the next 10, 11 days, the kids will stay at home. Here in the city of Ottawa, that's not the case. Dr. Etch is saying that she doesn't feel that it's at that level within the schools. The concern for her is in the community. But we already spoke to a number of people that, you know, there are parents who are concerned. So we'll talk about that in a second. But first, Bill Carroll, as you know, talking about it all morning long, went out and to the pharmacy, signed up, and he got the call for the AstraZeneca vaccine, and he joins us now. Bill, George texted, and he says, can you see if Bill suffered any serious side effects? I have mine tomorrow, and I will cancel if Bill doesn't make it home. Well, you're on your way home, correct?
Yeah, well, I'm sitting in the car now. I just spent my 15 minutes afterwards, and now I'm ready to go. But yeah, I didn't talk about it as much this morning as you might think, because when I brought it up early, I started to get the hate mail. Privileged guy living in Manotick, this should be going to an essential worker. And, you know, to that I say, look, I follow the rules. Yep. Some of them I don't like. Some of them work in my favor. Essential workers are not being given AstraZeneca anyway. So, you know, I'm taking the one that a lot of people don't want, the AZ vaccine. So that it is what it is. And if privileged is inhaling steroids every single day of your life so that you can breathe with your asthma, if that's privilege, then I guess I'm privileged. So, you know, I'm eligible. So are people my age. Plus, I have a pre-existing underlying condition. This was the day I was allowed to get it, and you're damn right I got it.
And
I was happy to be here, let me tell you. I was in the door the minute the door opened. I was flying right inside.
And that 15-minute waiting period, any reaction whatsoever? Except your smile, I'm guessing?
No, I got to tell you, I've never been that happy to get a needle. I'm not a real needle-fearing guy, but there's always that split second before they stick it in where you hold your breath and you don't want to look. This time, I watched it go in and took a photo, and I was just so excited to get it. And it's really an interesting feeling. You've heard other people describe it as joy and elation and, you know, knowing that for you within the next couple of weeks, you're going to be just a little bit safer. And longer term, the science is starting to show maybe you'll also make other people around you a little more safe, too. So, I mean, how could you not be excited about a moment like that after the year we've all lived?
Absolutely. And that's the thing, right? I mean, you've got asthma. You've taken it more serious than anyone I know. And we have not seen each other at times because of it. And I texted back.
I know. I'm a bit crazy with the rules. I guess.
You are. You also got to work on your camera skills. You sent me that shot. Are you sure that's your arm? It looks far too muscular. I guess you're posing like in a selfie, right?
When you have to carry this much extra weight around,
there you go.
The muscles get a lot of exercise.
There you go. And I just, you know, I shared my joy. My sister, who's got Crohn's disease, and she, like you, has locked in, waiting for her turn. She sent me a nice note saying, guess what? They made the call for me, too. And she is over 55, so she is eligible. And it's going to be a life changer for her, who hasn't been able to really hug any of her family members, as you know, for a long time. And that's the truth. Families everywhere, Bill.
Yeah.
And that's
my
most
second
important.
Appointment is set for July 27th.
Okay.
2 days before my birthday, 4 months down the road. You know, I kind of hope that shortens up for two reasons. One, you know, we're kind of out on a bit of an experimental limb with the 4 month waiting period.
Yeah, exactly.
And two, it would mean enough vaccines are coming in that we could start to give people their second shot because virtually everybody has their first shot. So, here's hoping that by the time we get to July 27th, everybody listening right now has at least one shot and is in line to get their second one.
Yeah,
because that's how we're going to get our lives back.
Well, it's what's happening. With all this negative stuff we're talking, this is what I wanted people to hear is that, hey, you, when your number comes up and you get the call, let's do it because it's happening now. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate sharing it.
Good talking to you.
Bill should be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m., sorry. Right here, of course, on News Talk 580 CFRA. All right, back to the parents now. Let's bring in co-chair of the Ottawa-Carleton Assembly of School Councils, who also is a mom, Malika Hendela. Good morning. Good to talk to you again. Are you there?
Like Bill, I have life reasons that I got my shot a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, get in, get out, get your shot when it's ready and just, it changes everything.
Well, and it's kicked in now for you, right? How has it changed everything? What do you mean by that?
It's just nice to see something working. Something doesn't change anything in my day-to-day life. And so it's funny that you guys call them, it's not funny. Everything is a disaster sort of for everybody this week trying to figure out do our kids go to school or not.
Right.
My son is in the safest class on the board. I can tell you that this morning, Leslie, because we got case notification last week. His entire class got tested in the last 5 days.
Entire class.
And today was the day that they could all go back if there were no positive cases. So I'm probably the only, well, not the only, there's about...
the calmest parent, probably, right?
I am, except yesterday I watched trustees saying they weren't sending their kids to school today. These are the people who are responsible for all of us in the running of our schools, and they don't feel it's safe for their kids.
Yeah, I talked to Mark Fisher. I talked to Mark
Did
Fisher.
You?
Yeah, and he's got two kids, one of whom has been tested 5 times, sent home 3 times in, you know, isolation. And he said, look, with the variants and the numbers, and even though we're getting the reassurance, 99% of classes, 99% of teachers and students, according to the Ministry of Education, he couldn't do it this week. He's going to wait until after next week's break, which seems to make sense.
Sure, but so Mark and all the other trustees, and I'm not like piling on Mark, we all have to make our choices, but they
should set the example, you're saying?
Well, here's the thing. Imagine we had a group of people who stepped up and asked for the responsibility.
Well, he is.
He's, to advocate for
us. He's saying we need to make them safer, absolutely. But I mean, you don't want him sending his kids to school if he doesn't
absolutely.
Feel comfortable. And in fact, I applaud him for sharing it because it allows other parents to not feel as badly.
Because everybody else has been quiet.
Yeah, everyone else has been quiet.
And so I'm not going to dump, like...
Hey,
I saw
you know what?
It and I'm like, Mark, at least you're raising the issue. You're saying that you're not comfortable.
Yeah.
I didn't say this to him one-on-one. So I'm kind of, it's the elephant that's out there because it's even Dr. Etchison's comments are it's in our community.
Yeah, not in the schools. Not bad enough where we require that.
If it comes into the schools and we're worried about not sending our kids, it means we don't have confidence in what was done in the classrooms. And we're going back to August when all the rules that you and I have to live by if we see each other on the street didn't get put in a classroom.
Well, we take care of long-term care homes now. It's time to take care of the teachers, don't you think?
Can you imagine having to have to go to work today? And the people who are supposed to look after this for me are saying it's not safe, but I have to go to school. And if they don't go to school, it's a substitute teacher that gets called in who doesn't get paid if they don't go in. And this is the same thing as the long-term care, but the long-term care homes are in lockdown. Like, you can't go in and out. We have to come back to everybody's choices are impacting other people. And it's that I think there's a lot of people still not feeling their choices because it hasn't hit them. COVID hit my world the first week of lockdown. So everything in our life is dictated on those perceptions, on those experiences. I've had 3 family members, 2 confirmed and 1 likely, who have all had it in different areas. And one almost died many times. And but I still sent my child to school today.
Because the testing worked, right? Everything that's what we need to do, more of what exactly your school did.
Exactly, because if we had the asymptomatic testing, if we had the conversations between the parents involved, and who all of us, we had a WhatsApp group that just grew in the last 5 days.
No kidding.
Because we worked as a team, as a community, to say we're safer together if we know what's happening with each other. And that was what got me through our first testing experience. We've been lucky. We've talked many times, right? I've said our school is small. We're so lucky. We had it. And some families, their test results got delayed 5 days. That was scary.
Yeah, and hopefully things will start to, to speed up now with the demand and the conversation shifting much more to the schools.
Malika, our part. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the update.
Okay, bye.
And Malika Hendela, co-chair, Ottawa-Carleton Assembly of School Councils. 10 o'clock, let's break for news. News Talk 580 CFRA. Yeah, let's try and get a medical opinion now when it comes to the schools. We've heard from parents who really call it a tug of war. You know, I'm told the schools are safe, but then I'm hearing they've closed in Peel. I'm hearing that here that even a school trustee isn't sending his kids to school. And you know what? There's only 3 or 4 days left, and then we're off for a break. So why don't they just close the schools now and just, you know, let it work its course through here and not take the risk? Why isn't that an option? Let's find out. Dr. Paul Romeliotis, Medical Officer at Health Course, CEO of the Eastern Ontario Health Unit. Dr. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
You want to weigh in there? Is it the right decision, even though we've only got 4 days of school this week, to keep it open, knowing that we have next week off?
Listen, I had that dilemma over the weekend as well, Leslie, and I was looking at our numbers. I have closed 4 schools in our area out of 130. And we have, the reason is because there are multiple cases in each school, and most, and I would say all but one of them are not related to each other. So they all come from the community. So there comes a tipping point where you have to balance what the number in the community is, because that's going into the schools, versus, keeping, you know, some semblance of normality within the schools. So I believe, I did not have justification for my local, for my area to close the schools down for the next week, particularly last minute like that, because it would put a lot of parents, you know, in the lurch because of daycare and so on, knowing that we're going to have a break next week. And so I'm comfortable with not closing the schools in my area. Because, and I'm looking at the numbers. Like I said, I have 120 schools, 4, are, with a couple of outbreaks, and like I said, I've closed 4, not because, again, I'm worried the schools are unsafe. It's because the disruption that it causes.
Right.
And some of these schools are small, the 150, 200 children, you know, and if half the staff are isolated, then you can't operate the schools.
So are the schools reporting to you, or how do you, okay, that's how you find out, and then based on that, you make the call. Is that
that the what happens is we know the kids, every school-age child, we ask them what school they go to, and then we do the follow-up. And then we have to follow up the whole classroom sometimes, like how close were you sitting to the child and who was there. It's a real disruption in this. And I can give you some other data.
Yeah.
Last week, okay, there were, I mean, as of today, there was 2,487 cases in 1,000 schools in Ontario, and there's 2 million kids.
Right.
You know, it's a very low number.
Yeah.
So I don't buy the argument that schools are not safe.
So
I buy the argument, however, that schools reflect what goes on in the community. And we see it time and time again. As the community numbers go up, we see it trickling into those you know, schools, just like we saw it with long-term care. You know, it went in that way.
But Dr. Paul, is it not true that, sorry to interrupt, but is it not true that the kids who are young don't experience it the same way? They could be asymptomatic?
Yes, we have done testing asymptomatically. We haven't found any cases in my area. And so, you know, we haven't had that suspicion, that proven yet.
Okay.
But again, even if a child is asymptomatic in school and there are proper precautions taken, it's very low risk to everybody else.
Right.
So, you know, and you know what? Yes, the younger the child, the more difficult it is to contain the child and maintain you know, physical distancing and masking and all these things. But I can tell you, this has been going on, and whenever we see high community, then we see it in the schools. As the community goes down, we have no issue in the schools. And even now, like I said, I was hard pressed to close. I was actually thinking about it over the weekend because I saw these 4 schools, but then all our other schools don't have cases and don't have, you know, there's no reason for us to close it at this point.
Okay, so,
and I didn't want to do it last minute.
Okay, I hear you, but you're saying when it goes up in the community, it goes up in the schools. It's going up in the community, Dr. Paul. Should
we
be proactive, especially with the variants?
I know it is. We have to, and then that's why we're reevaluating it. If it wasn't for the next 3 or 4 days, I would be, I am keeping a very close eye on it.
Yeah.
I do know that we're going to have a break over the holidays, and this is my concern, though. If you recall, at Christmas time, when kids were home, a lot of them were unsupervised.
Yeah.
Their positivity rate quadrupled.
That's right.
Okay.
Better you have them in a controlled classroom than playing with their friends.
And that's my issue.
That's
my concern. So I'm hoping that at once we'll. You know, a lot of people are calling for, why don't you just close this week and, you know, add it on to next week and they'll be home for 14 days.
Yeah.
That's fine if they stay at home, don't have sleepovers, which was what they had in the Christmas holiday.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm very concerned about that.
It's a brand new pandemic with the variants, right? I mean,
is
it out of control, Dr. Paul?
I don't think it's out of control. I think that it can be out of control if we don't take the necessary mechanisms. Today, the numbers went up by 3,065 in the province. And I don't know what the local numbers are, but we're starting to creep up on those numbers. We're seeing, again, the deaths are lower, which is very good, but we're seeing higher ICU numbers. Even in my area, I got 32 hospitalized, 9 in the ICU, just in my area.
Mm.
And a couple of them are in their 50s. So we're seeing a more severe disease with the variants. We're seeing it spread more easily, and we're seeing it affect younger people in a more severe way.
Yeah.
So and that is if it doesn't translate into increased deaths, it does translate into increased illness and increased hospitalization and ICU use, and the numbers are going up. So we don't want to overwhelm our system, but importantly, we'd like to prevent it as much as possible because, you know, what kind of long-term consequences are they going to have? There's long haulers, and there's all kinds of things that, you know, we're learning about this as we move forward. So if we don't act now I've called for a provincial, like my colleagues, a provincial stay-at-home order.
Yep.
If we don't stay home, buckle down for the next couple of weeks, really, this is going to be a telltale sign for us.
So stay-at-home means nobody from outside your household, even outside.
Exactly.
It means you only do grocery shopping and nothing else.
Only essentials. Go out and come back. And it's only for, like I said, three to four weeks until so we can start seeing at least a light at the end of that tunnel. It's just unfortunate that, you know, we're now ramping up with our vaccines, and now we're getting, you know, if it wasn't for these variants, we'd all be smiling.
Yeah,
now, you know?
Well, and that's the thing, right? Life is challenging, and this is a big one.
And this doesn't help, you know, so this is a big challenge, but yeah. I do believe that we do have, you know, this next month to, you know, the next 4 weeks, what it is, just that we'll be able to ramp up our vaccines, stay at home as much as we can, and I think we'll kind of come out of this in a much better position.
People are pushing back. There are restaurant owners. I don't have to tell you. There's a salon owner I interviewed on CTV Morning Live. She's opening regardless because there's no proven cases linked to a hair salon.
You know what? There's no proven cases, I understand, but there's also, you know, the science that tells us right now we have VOCs, which we didn't have a couple of months ago, and we don't know what we're going to do. So I know that this is a short-term pain for longer-term gain. You know, if one of the things that we know and our modeling is going to show that if we kind of do it semi-lockdown, and when I talk about a lockdown, when I say it's not effective, like I was on your show last week, I meant without a stay-at-home order.
Right.
So when you have...
This
you
is
know,
semi right now.
Yeah, now it's semi, because you're kind of like, you know, things are open and, you know,
hey,
people can go out.
Dr. Paul, have you seen the footage from the malls?
I know. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Big box stores as well. So we need to rein in on those, decrease those, or close the malls, or decrease them dramatically in terms of numbers. People should also get the message that they should stay home and not go out unnecessarily and unless it's for, you know, medical reasons or for, you know, getting food. And to me, that's going to be a short-term sort of thing. If we keep lingering with the semi-lockdown and, you know, not giving that strong message to stay home with a stay-at-home order, I believe it's going to just last. It's going to be on-off, which is much more detrimental to the businesses than it would be just for a shorter period of time with a bigger effect.
Is it time to get the teachers and essential workers vaccinated, Dr. Paul?
I think that we should be looking at, certainly there are certain pockets of the population, essential workers, particularly in the GTA area, that are frontline, that are high risk, and those are the high risk pockets that we're addressing a lot in the Ottawa and GTA area.
Okay.
So I think we have to consider those as well. And we also have to still look at the risk, because don't forget, even though we're getting more and more young people in the ICU, this morning I was told by Dr. Williams that still about 54% of the ICU admissions are people above 60, between 60 and 75.
Because
we've vaccinated all the 80-year-olds, and now we're doing the 75. So
now, these aren't people who live in homes. These are people who live
these are people who live in
community.
In community.
In their homes.
You know,
no,
we're not talking congruent living settings.
Yeah. So what is it? They're visiting friends or family coming over?
Yeah. And all the cases, most of the cases that we're seeing are community acquired. In other words, they visited somebody, there was a social gathering and those type of things. Then they come home and now with those VOCs, they infect the whole family.
Yeah.
So it's called the multiplier. I call it the multiplier effect. You know, you got one person going out meeting a friend, comes home, gets a VOC, comes home and the whole family, you know, seven people sometimes.
Wow.
So this weekend we had a record in my area. Over the weekend we had 115 cases, you know, between Friday and Monday.
How many of those were VOCs?
70%.
Wow, 70% now are variant cases.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's not good. Hey,
yeah.
I've got a listener question here at 580-580. Mm-hmm. Can you ask Dr. Paul about vaccinations in Eastern Ontario versus Ottawa? How's it going?
I, I can tell you that we're actually ramping up. As of today, we've delivered 30,000 doses. We have and you have to understand, our population that's vaccinatable is about 170,000. And so we've done about 30,000 right now. We're poised to do another 35,000 over the next 4 weeks, because that's the vaccine we'll be getting. So if you're looking, we're looking at moving forward in a very accelerated way. We're actually now planning this week alone 12 clinics, mass immunization clinics, and on average eight per week until the beginning of May. Then we'll re-add some more clinics, because we can't add more until we know what our supply is going to be. Okay. So we're actually ramping up right now. We started slow because we had very low numbers in terms of vaccine coming to us, even much lower than Ottawa's. But now we're catching up.
I'm just getting the numbers. You said 3,065 across the province.
Yeah.
Here in Ottawa proper, 165.
Yeah, you see, it's really keeping up. I mean, Ottawa was in the 200s over the weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to say we're going the right direction. Or is this because it's kicking in, or is this a blip?
I think we have to look at it over a period of like at least seven to 14 days, at least two weeks.
I got excited there.
It is going a bit down, but the provincial numbers are sort of stabilized, you know, at the 3,000 range now. You know, there were 1,000 and they're still at 2,000, now they're at 3,000. And models have shown if it continues this way, it's going to be 4,000, 5,000, 6,000. You know what I mean? It's going to go higher provincially. So we need to do something about it. And like I said, I think that a stay-at-home order is going to be something that, although it's, you know, sometimes it's difficult to enforce, but at least people get the message. Stay at home as much as you can. The mobility is what gets these numbers up. The more mobile the population is, we know it correlates statistically.
You know, we've talked a lot, as you know.
Yeah.
The question I always ask is, when do you see this, you know, some sort of normalcy is the term we keep using. That you kept saying, hopefully summer. Is the VOC, a variance of concern, going to change that?
I don't think so, because it may be a bit slower because we have the vaccine. And, you know, I was just reading an article right now that, you know, with the UK variant that we have, our vaccines are still effective. So I am optimistic that once we vaccinate a lot of people, we get into the summer where, you know, there'll be more people can go out and so on. I think that we'll be able to have some laxity in these restrictions. One of the good news stories is, Leslie, I think I was talking to you about this, that I was quite disappointed that that we hadn't changed our long-term care and retirement home protocols because they're all vaccinated.
Right.
So on Friday, we did.
Okay, so they're no longer being confined to their rooms.
Well, that's right. There's you know, they're within limits, obviously, because we're still worried about the VOCs. But now they can, you know, there's loosening of those. The outbreaks now are only going to be calling an outbreak if two cases are in a home. Right now, we call it with one.
With one. And so, usually it's staff, right? It's not the resident.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So now what we'll be doing is there's a bit of a lax in the, you know, I'm not saying that we've removed all the restrictions, but at least they can go out and they can mingle with each other, you know, with the precautions and so on. So that's the good news. So if we can sort of extrapolate that to society, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Slowly.
Final question coming in from our texter for you, Dr. Paul. Where are most of the cases coming from? Grocery store contact, home visiting, or restaurants?
Home visiting and mingling socially.
There you go. So the grocery stores and restaurants?
We see a few. We've seen a few in food premises and in grocery stores. But you know what? It's more the staff.
Okay. Well, then why aren't we allowed patios?
again, it's because we don't want to take a chance because you have prolonged contact without masks.
Unless you're IKEA in the malls. You know, well, it just doesn't make sense.
Thing as well. I think it's too many people there as well, but it's a different context. They're not removing masks, and if you can control them, but I'm not saying that one is better than the other.
Well, and you want to shut IKEA and malls anyway, right?
Well, I want to either shut them or really restrict the number of people that go in there. That was one of the things that we're calling for. We're calling for a stay-at-home order and sort of see what's, you know, get rid of some of the what we make that list of non-essential longer. Let's put it.
Well, you just made a case for keeping restaurant patios open when you told me it's so few and it's staff.
Well, the thing is, though, that we don't know what the VOCs are and what's going to happen with people.
Then level the playing field. Level the playing field, right? That's what you're saying.
I'm saying level the playing field. Perfect. I'm not. That's exactly what I'm saying, because I hear them. They're saying, like, you've closed us down and you haven't closed IKEA
down.
Yeah,
and they're right.
I think you should level it. You should level it, reconsider what's essential, what's non-essential.
If you want,
you're going to keep them open, do it in a much much more stricter way.
If you want buy-in, then level the playing field. And I don't blame them for being angry. Thank you, Dr. Paul. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Always candid with us, Dr. Paul Miliotis. We'll take a break. News Talk 580 CFRA.
This is Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA. Share your opinion now. Text us at 580-580.
Well, you can add Registered Nursing Association of Ontario to the list of those demanding more from the province. Lockdown all non-essential services, topping their wish list. Vaccinate all essential service workers. Provide 10 paid sick days for all workers. Put in a moratorium on all residential and encampment evictions. Restrict travel within Ontario and between Ontario and other provinces and countries to only essential travel. Let's bring in the CEO of the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, Dr. Doris Greenspun. Good morning, Doctor. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having us back.
You say you were in the midst of a brutal third wave. What happens if those measures aren't adopted?
Well, we already are over 3,000 people, actually 3,065 today in Ontario, new cases, 510. Never we had this during the pandemic period in ICU. 8 new deaths. We are going to move to 5,000. We are worse even. We are going to invite B1, which is the virus that does not react well to the vaccine, the Brazilian one, and we will not know how to get out of this. Will be an awful summer, and people will die in larger and larger numbers, and every time younger and younger. This is absolutely now negligence. It's lack of action for political reasons, not for evidence. Everybody that understands the evidence is pleading to the premier, including me personally pleading to the premier by phone, to please not listen to politics in his caucus, to move with evidence.
And did you get a chance to say that to the premier?
Absolutely.
And?
Well, we are waiting. Today there is an announcement in the afternoon. It's about, I understand, vaccine rollouts. That's good, because we have 1.5 million vaccines in the fridge. We are asking, as you mentioned before, that we vaccinate all essential service workers.
Yep.
But that in itself is not enough now. We're too late. So that's a good progress, if that's what it is. But we need a lockdown, and we need restriction, total restriction of movement.
Would you close schools too, doctor?
Well, unfortunately, this is what has become. This is what frustrates us, those of us that understand the evidence, and the public, quite frankly.
Mm.
It did not need to be this way. Or we needed to do these measures before to keep the schools open, but we didn't. We are always not too late, and then too little.
You're worried about the fourth...
We'll need to close schools, and I can assure you that that's what will happen when, first of all, it already happened in Peel, will happen in Toronto, etc.
Otherwise, you're worried about a fourth wave.
Well, there will be a fourth wave if we continue. And the fourth wave, though, will not be only with this horrible variant from UK. It will be with the variant that now is preoccupying so much BC, which is the Brazilian one. And that's a terrible one, because while the one from UK multiplies faster by, quite a bit, the Brazilian one multiplies faster than the UK and does not react nearly as well, and sometimes does not react. People are getting reinfected. People vaccinated in Brazil are getting reinfected.
Wow.
And the tragedy, is not only the premier is not moving with measures. Look at what people are doing.
Yeah,
It's like nothing is happening.
Yeah, it's preventable, and it's still being spread. That's the sad part.
Absolutely. It's completely preventable. People do not understand the job of a virus is to find the host.
Well, the message is loud and clear. You've told the premier. You, like us, will be watching at his announcement this afternoon. The Registered Nursing Association of Ontario's CEO, Dr. Doris Greenspun, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 10:31. Let's break for news. News Talk 580 CFRA.
This is... This is Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA. Share your opinion now. Text us at 580-580.
If I asked you, what's your experience like working from home? I would get different answers, right? But there'd be two camps. Those who have loved it because they've, well, saved money, saved the commute time. Go through the list of all the positives, right? And then there are those who talk about, well, everything from exhaustion from the Zoom to loneliness. But there is going to be a group of people when this is all over who say, I want to keep working remotely. So much so that many have actually sold their house in the city and moved further away. As you know, we got a hot real estate market, and it's true everywhere, whether it's Ottawa or other cities in the country or other parts of the world as well. So we're going to talk about that. Plus, how do you convince your boss to keep working remotely if that's your thing? Let's bring in workforce performance strategist Ajay Pangakar. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good to talk to you, Leslie, considering all the bad news going on in the world right now. So it's nice to talk to you. Great voice. So how are you?
It's always good to hear you and give us some insights into what's going to happen in the near future and also how to get into the boss in their good camps to hopefully make what you want happen.
Well, you know, Leslie, if I had a crystal ball, though, I would be social distancing from a private island right now.
But, yeah.
You know.
Hey, is there really such a thing as Zoom bashing?
Yeah, well, there is. I mean, at this point, we seem to be at a point 1 year into this of remote working where we are now blaming Zoom for our isolation. And what's interesting is that I think that's a superficial excuse to blame Zoom for our loneliness and our isolation, only because we've been restricted fully. What I mean by that is that not only are we working from home, but we're told to stay home for all social activities. So if we were working from home, let's say in a normal period without a pandemic on our doorstep, you know, we would probably be happy working from home because we would be allowed to go out and socially interact with people and go out for the, you know, the Sanka set kind of thing, you know, at a bar or, you know, that kind of stuff, or socialize with our family or friends and have them over on weekends. I just think that the Zoom bashing is a little extreme, and don't get me wrong, I'm not defending Zoom, I'm not a pro Zoom in any way, and that doesn't mean I'm against it. It just means that there is a feeling that because we're in front of a camera all the time and we're working at home continuously in that isolation, that we are just looking for a scapegoat.
Now, bosses are demanding, and they're under a lot of pressure right now, as much as the rest of us, of course, for productivity. If the Zoom loneliness is affecting you, how do you get that across without looking weak to your boss?
Well, you know, I think that times have changed a little bit. Bosses, in most instances, are pretty much the ones that are let me just repeat that. Bosses are pretty much more understanding now than they were before. And because we're all in that same boat, right? We're all in that same situation where we have to deal with this type of remote access. And so bosses have become more understanding. So you feeling that you're being weak is not really a sign of that. I think you need to share that thought with them in private, in confidence, naturally, just to ensure your mental wellness. Because if you are feeling, you know, lonely, and then you're just going meeting after meeting online, you really need to speak to somebody and say, hey, we need to relook at this and manage this a bit better. And it probably is not just you. You might be speaking on behalf of a lot of your colleagues as well. So it's important that you step up and say something. It takes a bit of courage on that. And you've heard me say this before, Leslie, if your boss doesn't understand, you know, unfortunately, and I don't want people to quit their jobs tomorrow, but you may be working for the wrong boss.
Yeah. Well, and I'm wondering if the boss's boss is in tune so much watching that your boss make sure that he or she understands that, the landscape has changed.
Well, it is, and I think the senior leaders of the organizations, you know that, you know, as I like to put it, the toothpaste is out of the tube. We can't put it back in.
Yeah.
And I hate to say this, and I don't really wish it upon the world, but experts and analysts have been saying this is not the last pandemic. We can expect another and a different one. And so the reality is we're moving into a new world and a new way of doing things. And I've written an article on that about how and where we work is going to change completely. And the important point here is that moving forward, forward, we have to rethink how we do things and how we work. And actually, it's not a bad thing that we work remotely, because in a knowledge economy, we're not meant to be producing widgets on an assembly line and to have to show up at 9 to 5. We are living in a knowledge world, so it doesn't require that interaction. However, you know, I might say it's going to sort of highlight probably a class divide significantly, because
yes,
a lot of people who have to go in retail or whatever that are going to be affected by
yeah.
this.
Now, we are in a huge government town, as you know. Majority of people listening probably are somehow affiliated with the federal government, if not the provincial government or the municipal government. That being said, the 7 to 3, 8 to 4, 9 to 5 commute and so on in the offices downtown, given the fact that government is going to be needed as we go through this, means the layoffs are probably going to be few and far between. Will they still go back to their office, do you think? Or do you think going forward that the way government does business is going to change as well? Like the private sector?
Well, the government is a big, you know, it's a big elephant. You can't really turn it around very quickly.
Right.
And even in times of pandemic, I don't think we're going to see dramatic changes in the next few years. However, and again, this is a bold prediction on my part, there's an opportunity for governments at all levels, especially, you know, understand, you know, if you think about the federal government, they own billions of dollars, or if not, they have leasing agreements in the billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And think about that, and they're committed to, like, for the next 5 or 10 years.
In fact, you could say that, you know, there are a lot of businesses that depend on the federal government to, you know, restaurants, I mean, go through the list. Never mind transit. We're investing huge amounts into transit, and if suddenly you don't have to go to work, we can't afford not to.
Exactly. You know, it's peeling an onion here, right? We're just
yeah.
taking layers after layers, and things have to change. And unfortunately, I don't think anybody has an answer, but I think people in the next, I would say this event that we're experiencing right now, we're going to see a 10 to 15 year evolution in how we do things. So the way downtown is going to look, there's already talk about that. If you watch the media, there's a lot of talk about how downtown is changing. If lease spaces are being reduced and people don't have to come in and work, there will be a hybrid model. People still show up at the office. But if you don't have the crowds downtown to help the mom and pop restaurants, you know, there's a real economic change here that governments have to think about. As you mentioned, Leslie, transit, the billions of dollars we're putting in transit, do we need all that billions of dollars in transit if people are not commuting on a regular basis? There's a myriad of questions that are going to be brought up to be answered, and government will have to step up.
I have less than a minute. If your boss says, no, you're coming back to work, can you actually argue it?
Well, right now you probably could, only because that, you know, we're talking about fourth waves and stuff like that. You know, as the light begins to brighten at the end of the tunnel, there is a workplace safety issue that we have to address here, and the employer has to provide a safe environment, if not safe alternatives. So as an employee, you do have certain rights under law to, you know, refuse or challenge that. If they force you, then you do have some recourse a little bit, but, you know, they can't necessarily force you if they don't provide a safe environment.
Ajay, always appreciate your conversation, sir. Thank you.
It was great talking with you, Leslie. Take care.
You too. Ajay Pangarkar, Workforce Performance Strategy. 11 o'clock, time for news. News Talk 580, CFRA.
This is Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA. Be a part of the conversation. Text us at 580-580.
All right, let's talk about schools here. As you know, the education minister says they're 99% cases free of COVID in the school. It's not an issue because of all the measures they've taken. Dr. Virich is here in the city, says the problem is in the community. The schools, not so much. She is not recommending, unless there's an outbreak in the schools, that all schools close. We know her colleague, Ed Peel, in Mississauga, felt totally differently. And they have closed the schools now for this week and next week, which of course is the delayed March break. Then this morning on CTV Morning Live, I had the trustee for the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board, Mark Fisher, who's, of course, also a parent. He has decided, even though the schools are open, to keep his kids at home. I heard from a vice principal at a school here in Ottawa saying the same thing. She will keep her kids at home. So next to parents, I can imagine that teachers are probably pretty anxious as well, if not a little more, given what they've been on the front lines with in the last little while. Uncertainty being part of it. Let's bring in Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association President Liz Stewart. Good morning. Nice to talk to you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Nice
to talk to you too.
Is anxious a good word? How would you describe what the feeling is right now with your members?
I'm not sure that anxious fully encapsulates it, actually. I mean, quite frankly, they're anxious, they're frustrated, they are afraid, I think, is not too strong a word to use. And not just for themselves. I mean, they have real fear for their own families and what they may be bringing home. And also for the students they serve every day. And the colleagues down the hall and the custodians and the administration within school buildings, because they're all equally vulnerable at this time.
For those who don't know, what does the fear consist of?
Well, I mean, I think in part it's that they're seeing what's happening in the community. And we all know that schools are community hubs. You know, what happens in the greater community you see reflected within schools. And, you know, we can have the chicken and egg argument about whether, you know, the schools are actually part of transmission or not. But the bottom line is, if you have a virus within the community, you for sure got it within the schools. And so, you know, we may have students who may be asymptomatic, but they're still carrying the virus and they're still passing it to one another. And classroom teachers are expected to, and all education workers, right, working with students in schools, remembering that, you know, we don't have distancing within our classrooms because this government did not fund that. So you have 30 students packed into classrooms where there isn't sufficient distancing, removing their masks and eating lunches in spaces that are too small for that number of individuals, with windows that don't properly open, so not proper ventilation. So yes, I can say there is real anxiety and fear about what is taking place in that space.
Time to close the schools?
I think that would be prudent. I mean, I also believe it would be prudent to step up vaccination for education workers. If we are going to argue that it is critical that we keep schools open, and, you know, we have often said, you know, we understand the need for in-school learning, but if it's critical that schools remain open, then why would you not make it equally critical to make sure that education workers are vaccinated?
It's interesting because a spokesperson for the education minister basically reiterates schools are safe. It's our firm belief that they should be open for in-class learning, and then goes on to say, due to our strong infection prevention measures, 99% of students and staff have no active cases of COVID-19. How do you respond to that? That's a brand new statement today.
Well, I mean, this government makes all kinds of statements, and oftentimes they're not actually followed up by any real fact. But I think anybody who's paying attention and looks at what's actually happening across this province, with schools being closed at an increasing rate across the province, with classes being put into isolation, that we can all accept it's in our schools. When we look at research that's coming forward now that says, you know, the new variant, kids are more susceptible to it. You know, I think those are all things we need to be paying attention to. And, you know, we have been very clear that we believe, and in this I will agree with the minister, he too says in-person learning is best. We 100% agree. I am a little skeptical in what his true agenda is when we know that this government's actually talking about making online learning permanent post-pandemic. So for somebody who pushes the fact that in-school learning is best, it's interesting that they're also pushing that at the same time.
How long do you want the school closed for? Is it just the next 10 days, like the rest of this week and next week, or longer than that? Because I've heard people different various, you know, times of that they want it closed for. Where do you stand?
I think what we would like to see is, especially in our hotspot regions, that we see schools closed, that we see there be a huge push to have education workers vaccinated so that at least they can be safe in their workplaces.
So once the teachers are vaccinated, they're good to go back and reopen the schools?
Well, I think at that point in time, it will certainly make my members feel a little safer,
sure.
Although they will still have concerns about the students they serve, because the other part is, we need the government to step up and actually put in place the robust measures they keep talking about that they haven't actually done, so that we can allow for distancing for students, so that we can make sure ventilation systems are up to snuff, so that we can make sure that there is true asymptomatic testing. taking place, because it's not just about my members, it's also about the broader communities they serve.
You want to protect your members, you want to protect kids, you want to protect the community. So you, as the president of the Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association, how do you deal with vaccine hesitancy? If your members, the teachers, don't want to get vaccinated, do they have the right to go to class during a pandemic and teach?
Well, I mean, what we have said is we want to make sure that they're prioritized so that they can have access to the vaccine.
Why wouldn't you make it mandatory if you're so concerned?
That's not my job. That's not my role. My role is to make sure, or to do everything I can to advocate for making sure it's available for them so that they can take it, understanding that you will get those who are unable to, because we all know there are instances, you know, due to allergies.
Are you good to remove that, to put them onto remote learning?
I think for some people that may actually have to be the way it goes, but you know, we would certainly advocate that, you know, if only that was the problem we were dealing with, helping people overcome that hesitancy.
So let me flip, but I still need, it's going to be a problem. We're seeing it already in long-term care homes. So let me flip the model. If one of your members refuses to get vaccinated, and they're not for medical reasons, but because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to be a guinea pig or whatever example, would you defend them in court to keep their job? Would you put their rights ahead of the kids and the community?
My role is to advocate to make sure that they have access to that vaccine.
But that's not my answer. That's not my question.
Also, I understand it is also our role, and we have been working hard with our membership.
Yeah.
The vast majority of whom are ready to go today.
Absolutely.
Right? And I look at other jurisdictions. For example, I know in New Brunswick, for example, where they actually prioritize vaccination for education workers. They actually went to the high schools and provided it.
But it only takes one, you know that, Liz, right? And that one teacher who could possibly ruin it for everybody else. So, you know, would you defend that person's right not to have the vaccine and go to work and stand in front of the classroom and put everybody, including other members, at risk, who you're supposed to be defending, right?
I think what we would say is that we would expect that all safety measures be put in place.
Okay.
To ensure that everybody is safe.
Okay. And if those measures are put into place, like you've said, they haven't in your opinion so far, would you be okay with sending them back not vaccinated if all those measures are in place? Because it could be the same thing, right? If someone's going in there refusing to be vaccinated.
I think, first of all, like I say, I am truly hopeful that, you know what? I'm hopeful that's a problem that we do have to talk about, because I'm hopeful that we're able to make sure we can get all of our education workers vaccinated.
Yeah, that would be a nice problem to have.
Oh, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And that we can make sure we have all of those other measures in place, that we have proper distancing, that we have the asymptomatic. Like, if we have everything else in place, then Leslie, I would love to have this conversation with you.
Well, and I feel for you, because you're pulled in the middle, you know, in both directions here, because you've got people who are going to, you know, who pay their dues and expect you to defend them, and then they're potentially putting the others, the majority of whom, you say, and I'm glad to hear that, who would not want to walk in the same school if there's someone in there who's possibly doing it. Although it could be argued, well, they're protected if they're vaccinated, right? So, I mean, it's an argument that's new to us, at least our generation. And I think we need to have a policy. And that's why I asked the question. Are you okay with one of your members going into a classroom as opposed to find another position in the office or at home? Or is there a compromise here that can be had?
I think what I would love to be able to do is have that conversation with somebody once I know that all of the other measures are in place. Once I know that, you know, this ministry and this government has actually stepped up and put in place what needs to be done, and actually taking responsibility, because they clearly have not done that for over a year.
Yeah,
they
I know you
rolling
feel that,
it to everybody else.
Yeah, and they also say it's 99% safe there. So as a, you know, parents are confused; they don't know who to believe. And then, you know, throw in the agenda, theirs and yours, and it's even further confusion for us, right?
Absolutely, you know, and what we're trying to do is say, look. My role is to keep my members as safe as I possibly can and to advocate for them as strongly as I can. But in order to do that and to truly be their voice, I also need to be the voice of the students they serve and the communities in which they live.
And that's what I heard in our conversation. I appreciate your time. Thank you, Liz. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. You take care.
You too. Liz Stewart, Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association president. It's not an easy one. You know, we saw what happened in long-term care homes. And we saw how the unions, you know, refused to make it mandatory, and yet we knew the cost in long-term care homes. Could schools be next? Let's hope not. Let's hope not. 11:18, we'll take a break. News Talk 580 CFRA.
This is Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA. Share your opinion now. Text us at 580-580.
Hey, we love local, right? We always say support local. Well, there's an interesting twist on an old favorite here in the great city of Ottawa. Hinton Burger hopes that they will have the comeback that they were planning until the pandemic hit, and then a couple of bumps along the way. And they're turning to you for help. It's kind of a unique way to do it. Let's find out more. Thomas Williams, owner of Hinton Burger. Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm well. How are you doing these days?
I'm great. Great. Yeah. Everything's good. Yeah.
So talk about Hinton Burger first for people who don't, you know the history of it.
So we're a local burger place. We started, we opened in 2010 in the neighborhood of Hintonburg.
Of course.
Very, you know, clever name.
Yeah. Do you make your burgers really hip? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. They're definitely, definitely hip burgers. Yeah, they're good. They've gotten hipper over the years. 2010, not quite as hip, but we're just starting then.
It's like the neighborhood, right? It's gentrifying and getting hipper. Yeah. And what makes a burger hip? Tell me what makes your burgers so special.
Well, I think having, like, we started off day one being named after the neighborhood, always wanting to contribute and give back. So that's kind of been, like, our biggest identity or our biggest kind of goal as a business in the neighborhood is to give back and to help the local food bank, Parkdale Food Center, and, you know, some local charities and local organizations. We always try to collab with people. Getting down to the burger would be the beef. We source, you know, local Ottawa farmers. We get it as close as possible, you know.
Love it.
We get our beef local and fresh. So, that's kind of, you know, a combination of those two things, I think, is what makes it.
It's a responsible business, clearly. You want to give back. You want to source local. I'm all over it. And now you're asking for help locally, right? Tell me a bit of where do things stand now in terms of your comeback?
We launched an Indiegogo campaign just to kind of raise the last bit of money that we needed to get kind of finalize everything so we can announce the location, we can tell people where we're going to be. You know, we kind of have everything worked out and planned. We just kind of needed a little help closing it out, but the campaign's been going great. We just had a really good weekend. On the long weekend, we raised over 30% of our total goal. We had a lot of people showing us love on the long weekend, so
yeah.
Great. I think we're sitting at about 85 or 86% of our goal, and about 80 people have contributed so far. So,
well, and a lot of people are saying...
feels pretty good.
So what are you asking that money for, Thomas?
So that would be just kind of like the last final things, just to get the equipment here and everything. It's a bit of a different setup than we're used to, so we're getting new equipment and to get everything kind of just installed, as well as just working on making the space look nice. You know, kind of the final touches, all the licensing, all the marketing, all the kind of boring stuff we've taken care of. But
get the word out. Now, how did you come up with this Indiegogo idea? I mean, it's kind of unique in asking for public money to help you start your business.
Yeah, well, we've seen like some businesses do crowdfunding before, you know, in other places and things. And yeah. we tried to do kind of a community-based crowdfunding thing when we moved locations from our original first location to the second bigger one.
Mm-hmm.
We actually did a small, like, we did a fundraiser at a local tavern and sold some perks and some gift certificates and stuff like that. So, and it just seems to really fit because the community helped us so much in the beginning. You know, that's kind of why we took off and we were popular and we won, you know, Ottawa's Best Burger a couple of times. It was the support of the community. So we kind of...
Why did you close?
Kind of involve those people again.
Why did you close originally?
At the last location, so we moved to a third location, a bigger spot, but we're a little bit out of the foot traffic area, kind of on the edge of the neighborhood. And I think it was just, sales didn't recover, they went down and they didn't recover. So yeah, I think it was a bad location is what was closed.
So where are you now? You can't tell us, right?
I can't tell you. No, but I can't tell you because we want to finalize everything.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's somewhere where there's a lot of foot traffic. Tell me yes, please.
Yeah, we're very central.
You learned that lesson.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
And how soon before you open the doors and announce it?
Should be May. Should be open in May. Indiegogo wraps up on the 20th, so you know, a week or two to finalize everything and be able to announce it. So I think, you know, we'll be able to announce it in May, and it'll be open sometime in May.
Now, everybody who donates gets something in return. Like, you can even get burgers, right? How does it work?
Yeah, so people can go on Indiegogo or on our, there'll be a link on our website. You can go look up the campaign, and then you can, yeah, so you can buy a T-shirt, you can buy hoodies, you can buy pre-buy burgers, gift certificates for burgers. We just sold our biggest perk, which is a custom burger with a custom name. Mm. So we have all sorts of different perks, all sorts of different kinds of levels. And we'll also be throwing like a, we'll also have a little party or a little for everybody to contribute, you know, try to, no matter what size of the contribution, we'll have a little bit of a party, a little bit of an event for everybody.
Is it virtual, or are you waiting till the pandemic's over?
Yeah, we'll have to wait till the pandemic's over.
Sounds good. Sure. Okay, what's your website, Thomas?
Location will be great. Hindenburger.ca.
That was easy. Hindenburger.ca. Yeah. Thomas Williams, owner of Hindenburger. Good luck with this. Appreciate
it. Thanks,
Cheers. Thank you. Bye. Look forward to tasting it one day. I didn't get a chance since I've only been here 2 years. All right, coming up.